This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
How's it going, everybody? Hope everybody's doing a little better now that some more time has passed. But welcome back to the Tell It Abs It Is podcast. I am your host, as always, Griffin Youngs. Before we get into anything else, a word from our sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it is also America's top-rated sportsbook, and it's not hard to figure out why. It's easy to navigate, has plenty of instructions for new bettors, and nearly limitless ways to get in on all of the action. And if you're looking to get in on the DraftKings scene, listen to this great offer. DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn $1 into $100 in site credits. That's right, pick any basketball team that is still in contention, bet $1, and if that team wins, you win $100 in site credits. Don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook also offers great odds and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. And if you want to get in on the action with the semifinals of the Stanley Cup playoffs going on right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is the place for you. They are safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code THPN for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. So I hope everybody's doing well now that we've had some time for the loss to marinate a little bit. It's been 6 days since the Avalanche were eliminated by the Golden Knights. Semifinals have started. Tampa Bay and New York are two games in. Vegas and Montreal are playing game two tonight. Time moves on, and time to move on for the Avalanche and start to look ahead towards next season already, because over the last little bit, as hockey's down to four teams, we've started to move on to off-season mode, and that's kind of what we're going to start doing from here on out. We're going to not cover everything at once this episode, because there is literally so much time to talk about everything that's going to happen with the Avalanche this off-season, all the way from Landeskog to Saad, the expansion draft, to the draft, to free agency. There's going to be a lot to talk about and a lot of episodes to talk about it, so today we're going to talk about what I think is probably what's going to get done first, more than anything else. Probably what the Avalanche are working on taking care of right now. And that is Gabe Landeskog. Landeskog, obviously, captain of the team, coming off of a 7-year deal, going to be a UFA when free agency opens up in about the next month or so. What's that going to look like? What's his new contract going to look like? Is he coming back? Is there a possibility that Landeskog does not come back to the Avalanche? I will say this. Gabe Landeskog is going to come back barring a complete and utter disaster. Things would have to horrifically fall apart for Gabe Landeskog to not be on the Colorado Avalanche next season. Like, in a way that nobody sees coming, that there would have to be, there would already have to be something there, some kind of beef between him and management or Bednar, and that's just not there. Landeskog is the captain of this team, and there's going to be a deal that's going to get struck here sometime in the near future. The only question is how much and how long. That tends to be how it works for every contract, but how much and how long. Landeskog right now is 28 years old. He's going to be 29 in November. So basically, pretty early into next season, he's going to be 29. And that's usually about the point you reach the end of your prime in hockey, about 29. Sometimes players can carry it over into their early 30s, but around that time, 29-ish, is when your prime starts to dwindle. But let's take a look at Landeskog's most recent numbers. In his last five full seasons, 16-17, Landeskog, this is the worst season in Avalanche history, one of the worst seasons ever had by an NHL team. Landeskog plays 72 games, 18 goals, 15 points, 15 assists, 33 points, minus 25. By far, hit the worst season of his career. Never comes close to that ever again. The next season, 78 games, 25 goals, 37 assists, 62 points, plus 16. Next season, 73 games, 34 goals, 41 points, 41 assists. I keep saying points instead of assists. I don't know why that's such a reflex with me, but 41 assists, 75 points. The next season, suffers through a lot of injuries, missed a fair chunk of the season, but he still plays 54 games, 21 points. I just did it again. 21 goals, 23 assists for 44 points. There we go. That's not hard. 21 goals, 23 assists, 44 points in 54 games, a respectable amount. And this year, he stays healthy for most of the season, missed one or two games, 20 goals, 32 assists, 52 points. So an upgrade over the same amount of games that he played last season. So you're getting top line production out of the guy essentially every year. It's not Nathan MacKinnon 100 point pace level, but it's you're coming in at around a point per game, essentially. A little less than that most of the time, but you're coming in around 82 points in a full 82 game season most of the time. And that's worth a fair bit of money. And it also should go without saying that stuff with Landeskog goes far beyond just what you see on the NHL website and cap friendly and analytics. Landeskog is a leader, and he's been pegged as a leader ever since he was drafted back in 2011. That was one of his selling points, is that this guy is a future captain. And he's pretty much been the captain of this team pretty much since he got here. And he was the captain of Team Sweden all those years ago, too. This guy is a leader through and through, and that's worth a fair bit of money as well. So Landeskog's current contract that just expired was a 7-year deal worth $39 million and was about $5.571 million a year every year, with a modified no-trade clause that expired this year. But Landeskog is undoubtedly getting a raise. We know that much. He's going to be making more on his next contract. That's a guarantee. And somebody is going to give it to him, whether the Avs do or not. But like I said, there's no way that the Avalanche just let Landeskog walk. That would be very poor management by Joe Sakic, and that's just not what he does. And Landeskog has said in the media that he's willing to take less, but come on, let's be real. What else was he going to say to the media when they're asking about his contract? Like, yeah, I'm going to get every penny that I'm worth. Yeah, I'm going to hold these guys, the Coles and everything. Of course he's going to say he's going to take less. He's the captain, and they're trying to win a Stanley Cup. He's not going to bring attention to his contract right now. We'll see if he and his agent feel that way when they're sitting down at the negotiation table, because everyone's all nice and friendly until there's money put on the line. And I love Landeskog, and I'm not accusing him of anything, but that's just how life works. Everyone's nice and friendly until the money is on the line, until Sakic offers them a contract that they don't like. Then it's a problem. So we'll see how willing he is to take less when he's sitting down at the negotiation table. And we'll see if his agent feels the same way as him. So that's just talk. Don't believe that. I'll believe it when I see it, because you hear that stuff all the time, players willing to take less. And you know what? Maybe he does. Honestly, I believe him a little bit that he'd be willing to do that. I don't think he's going to hold them to the flames and be like, I want $9 million, and if you don't do that, I'm going to walk away and go somewhere else. I think he's willing to be reasonable, but don't expect him to take $6 million for 8 years or take less than what he's making right now, because there'd be no reason for him to do that. And there are plenty of comparables that would make a lot of sense for a situation like this and have been signed in recent years. The one that sticks out to me the most is Anders Lee with the New York Islanders. This was after Tavares left, the year after Tavares left. Anders Lee signs this contract and he's 28 years old, the exact same age that Landeskog is now. He signs for $7 million for 7 years. This was obviously before the flat cap, but when you look at just ability, Anders Lee's more of a goal scorer. He has much of a net front presence. You look at the same kind of stat comparables that we just used for Landeskog: 34 goals in 2017, 40 goals in 2018, 28 goals in 2019, and 20 goals in 2020. And he signs this contract after his 28 goal campaign in 2019. I think an Anders Lee contract makes a lot of sense, and I think we're probably more likely than not going to see something like that with Landeskog. There's also contracts like Brendan Gallagher that was signed in October with Montreal, $6.5 million for 6 years. There was also Chris Kreider at last year's trade deadline, $6.5 million for 7 years. When I think about this contract, I can't imagine it really being anything more or really anything less. I think he's going to get the years on his contract. Colorado wants to keep him. He's the captain. He's been here from day one since getting drafted. He's been trusted as a leader on this team ever since he was drafted, now almost a decade ago now, which is almost ridiculous to think about. Landeskog was drafted in 2011. They're going to want to keep him. He's going to want to stay. I don't think anyone's going to be unfair here. I think probably Landeskog's camp is probably going to come in at 8. But like that's how negotiation works. You come in high, and I imagine Colorado's going to come in at probably around 6. And I imagine they're going to meet in the middle at around 7. And would he get the full 8 years? I don't know. Because obviously, there's the question of the later years of the contract. You know, if he signs an 8-year deal, he's going to be 36 when that expires. And Landeskog, he plays a physical game. No, he's not a super skilled player. He uses his body a little more. He gets more to the front of the net. He tries to knock pucks free. And you wonder the kind of effect that has on the longevity of a player. Now, me personally, I have no problem signing Landeskog to 7 years, like 8 years. At that point, like, that's just semantics anyway. You're talking about, what, 8 years from now, 2029 versus 2028? Like, at that point, if you want to be out of the contract by then, you can find a way out of it. If that extra year is going to be the sticking point for Landeskog's camp, you just do it. One extra year at $7 million. Sure, that might be a pain for you 7 years from now, but it also wouldn't be impossible to move at that point. If it's 1 year left, you can buy that contract out and eat the cap hit for 2 years. You can trade it, you can attach something to it and find a way to move it. Or maybe he retires by that point. Like, really, when it comes to a guy like Landeskog, who is a heart and soul player of this team, who's not just a leadership figure on this team, a top line player that is on the best line in the sport, you pay him the money. And if you give him that long-term deal, like I said, 7 or 8 years, does that bring the AAV down? Maybe. You know, if you're signing him for 5 to 6 years, I think $7 million is probably what you're looking at. If you're signing him to 7 or 8, I'd say probably 6.5, which is not a ton of savings against the cap, but in the flat cap world, everything's going to matter. And last year, everything was pretty screwed up by the flat cap coming in out of nowhere and GMs kind of having to panic and take over to prepare for it. Like Anders Lee's contract, I use that as a comparable, but that was signed in 2019, July 1st, 2019, on the first day of free agency. We were still a ways away from the pandemic hitting us back in really March of 2020. We didn't even know this existed at that point. The one that interests me, Chris Kreider, February 24th, 2020. We didn't know about the shortened season. We didn't know about the bubble. We didn't know about the flat cap. But the one I found relatively interesting was Brendan Gallagher in Montreal. 6.5 for 6 years. He signs this contract at 29 years old, October 14th, 2020. So this is free agency of the flat cap year for the Canadiens. Brendan Gallagher, he's not the captain of the Habs, but he's the alternate captain there. And he signed this contract as an extension. He's not actually on this contract yet. When this contract starts, he's going to still be 29, but by the time that season ends, which it would be next season, the 21-22 season, he's going to be 30 years old. And then when that contract kicks in, it's a 6-year deal. It'll expire when he's 36, 6.5. He's still on his current contract of 3.75 right now. The flat cap kind of screws everything up because, as we're talking about right now, we're potentially looking at the salary cap not moving or going anywhere for 4 to 5 years, which is still crazy to me. I don't know how much I believe that, honestly. I mean, that comes from reputable sources. I am not disputing those sources like Elliot Friedman and those guys who have plenty of contacts in the league, but I just find it a little hard to believe that the cap goes nowhere for 4 to 5 years when you're getting a brand new TV deal. You're getting expansion money from Seattle. Next season, you're pretty much going to have everything back open again. You're telling me it's going to take 4 to 5 years until the salary cap moves from $81.5 million? I just find that hard to believe. And if that is the case, then I think something has to be said for the financial structure of this league. Because I understand the pandemic screwed everything up for everybody across the world, and the playoff bubble for the NHL cost them millions of dollars. And this season also had them losing money with empty seats for a majority of the season. I understand that. But next season, things are pretty much going to be back to relative normal for most teams. I mean, Vegas is already back to 100% capacity. I imagine probably 90% of teams are going to have full capacity by October of next season. So, and even if they don't, for some teams, by the end of the year, they're going to be back at full capacity. I imagine even by Christmas or New Year's, they're back to full capacity by that point. So things are going to be back to normal pretty much by 2022. And you're going to have Seattle coming in, and you're going to have this new TV deal that kicks in next year that you're getting all this money for, and you're going to have now helmet sponsors like we talked about earlier in the season. Those are not going anywhere, and probably jersey sponsors eventually, as much as we hate them. But the salary cap is going nowhere? Not even like a million? Like, I'm getting a little off track here, but do you get what I'm saying here? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, there's a disconnect there in my brain. Like, I understand that the cap is fucked right now and it's going nowhere. But, like, I remember even, like, in the offseason, like, when we were having, like, CBA discussions, like, when we were still worried that, like, are we going to have a season that starts on time because of the CBA discussions? I remember Elliot Friedman saying on the 31 Thoughts podcast that we might go through this entire CBA with a flat cap. And that, to me, is ridiculous. Now, that has come down in recent months to 4 to 5 years. But even then, like, come on. 4 to 5 years? How, like, how does that work? The cap goes nowhere for every team for 4 to 5 years, even with all of the newly injected money coming in and the money-making machine that is Gate coming back to normal. It's going nowhere. I understand this offseason and probably the next one too, okay, but after that, not even like $1 million? Like, it's not like teams can't afford it. I'm getting completely off track of Gabe Landeskog here, but this kind of just clicked in my brain right now. I mean, you look at teams' final cap hits for the season. We're talking about, okay, the salary cap is 81.5. A lot of teams use LTIR, which is a pretty hot topic right now with the Tampa Bay Lightning as they're in the third round. I almost said the conference final. It's not the conference final. It's the semifinal because there are no conferences this year. It's all divisions. But anyway, the Tampa Bay Lightning, their final cap hit this season was $98 million. They used $17 million in LTIR. And a lot of that was Nikita Kucherov. Whether or not they cheated or not is a whole other conversation that I am not going to get into because that has been beaten to death all season. All I am looking at right now is the money. They paid $98 million to their players this season. That includes Nikita Kucherov. That includes, I forget who they had some other guy on LTIR who was retired for a long time. Marian Gaborik. They paid Marian Gaborik this season. I doubt any of you knew that Marian Gaborik was currently being paid money by the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, Marian Gaborik has not played an NHL game since 2018. He was traded from Ottawa in December for Cedric Paquette and Braden Coburn, just as a way for, I don't know, Tampa to get LTI. There is no possible way I could have a 3-hour episode explaining the intricacies of the salary cap. Even I don't understand this bullshit, but back to the point. Tampa Bay paid $98 million to their players this season. And you want to go down the list of looking at final cap hit player teams that were above the upper limit of 81.5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 teams. Right now, there are 31 teams in the NHL. So one less than half of teams in the NHL paid more than $81.5 million in cap space this season. Teams can afford it. And we're talking about intricacies like Montreal paying less than $1 million, or Colorado, for instance, we paid a little more than $1 million over the cap. This is LTIR, long-term injured reserve. You're basically, when you put a player on LTIR, you increase your cap space. Is the simplest way that I can put it. You can use the salary cap for that player and spend it on other things. It's not like their salary doesn't count. It's just, it increases your cap space with that player on LTIR. We had Eric Johnson on LTIR and Pavel Francouz on LTIR. They barely played at all this season. So that's what that is. But just getting back to my point of, like, the salary cap's not going up at all. You have half of your teams paying over the limit right now, and you've got a team in Tampa Bay in the third round that is icing essentially almost $100 million team. Now, you don't add Marian Gaborik to that, so maybe take about $5 million off. That's still $93 million in cap space, or Yeah, $93 million against the cap that they're icing in the playoffs right now. They're well over $10 million over the cap. And I'm not going to get into all, is that cheating, is it not, whatever. I don't really care anymore. That conversation's been beaten so far to death. But getting back to my point, that the salary cap's not going to go up at all. We're just going to live in a flat cap era for the next 3 to 4 seasons. That doesn't make any sense to me. I think that's going to change somewhat soon. Not this offseason, not next offseason, but I think maybe for the 2023 offseason, after that Stanley Cup has ended out, I think we're going to see a bit of an increase. I think we're making predictions for stuff we have no idea about right now. I think we're going to see the cap go up a little bit by then. But getting back to Gabe Landeskog, I got distracted because I was talking about Anders Lee and the whole signing a contract before the flat cap and now during the flat cap. Is that going to have any effect on Gabe Landeskog's contract? If this was last season, absolutely it would. This season, I don't know. I don't think it's going to have that big of an effect because you can still look at the cap percentage hit. Like Anders Lee takes, when he signed his contract, he took up 8.59% of the salary cap for the New York Islanders. Brendan Gallagher, when he signed his contract, takes up 7.98% of the $81.5 million cap. And right now, Gabe Landeskog, when he signed his contract for $5.5 million, he took up 8.66% of the salary cap at that time. I imagine that he's going to probably take up a bit more of that. I mean, I'm going to do my best to stall right now and try to calculate what that would look like, 8.66% of 81.55. This is what stalling looks like as I try to desperately type in numbers on my phone. But I imagine maybe around 9% of the salary cap is what he would get at that point. It's kind of difficult to say, but 8.66% of the salary cap against this salary cap is about $7 million, 7.05 to be exact. If you round up, it's 7.06 to be exact. So if you want to just say that Landeskog deserves more money, sure. You want to round that up to 9, fine. Let's round that up to 9 real quick. You get 81.5 times 0.09, 7.34. So you're talking semantics of a few extra $100,000. I mean, I wish I could be rich enough to have semantics of a few extra $100,000, but basically the number that we're landing on here, no matter what, is around $7 million. You look at cap hit percentage, you look at everything. $7 million seems to be the number that I always come back to. I think that is ultimately, in a fair negotiation, what they're going to land on. And I think 7 years is pretty reasonable for your captain, the heart and soul member of this team. It's hard to really go against that because you don't try to, like, well, in 4 years, let's reevaluate the situation with our captain. You want to lock that guy down pretty much immediately and figure everything out from there. You want to get it done, not have to worry about, this is our captain, he's here for the future, this is how much he's getting paid, you deal with it after that, and we're going to go try to win a cup with this now. So honestly, it's not like you're breaking the bank here. Like right now he makes 5.5-ish, you know, $5.571 million. We'll just call it 5.5 for the sake of brevity. He makes $7 million on his next contract. That's a $1.5 million increase, which is more. It's a raise, but like it's not going to ruin you. It's going to be money that you're just not going to have to pay somebody else, but it's not like going to be Cale Makar going from $880,000 to the probably ridiculous amount of money that he's going to make on his next contract, that we're probably looking at a difference of $8 million next season. That's a whole other story that it depends on my mood. I just want to talk about Landeskog right now. But with Landeskog, it's not like this is what's going to make or break the fabric of this team. I can't imagine that his agents and him are going to be asking for much more than this. And sure, I see an instance where he takes less. If he really is going to back up what he says, I would say really anything less than seven, I would say that he followed through and took less like he said he would. Seven or more, I will just kind of laugh it off and be like, okay, you were posturing then. Not like I would be mad at him at all for doing that, because it's a business, make your money, man. I fully support you. But I'd say if he takes like 6.5 or something like that, that's probably a little bit of a discount, because you also have to consider that Landeskog is an unrestricted free agent. If whenever free agency comes, I don't remember the exact date because it's not July 1st, and that's really throwing me off. Everything about this season has really thrown me off. So you have to think that, well, we know that if Landeskog hits the open market, the Avalanche are going to get outbid. Okay, NHL free agency is July 28th. So well over a month from now, there's still plenty of time to work this out. But if Landeskog does not have a deal by then, he's allowed to negotiate with other teams. And the simple fact of the matter is that if he reaches that point, the Avalanche are going to get outbid. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to lose him, but there are going to be other teams out there that can offer him significantly more money. There's probably a team that would be willing to offer Landeskog close to $8 million. Now, would I do that as the Avalanche? No, because, I mean, there could be a team like, let's just say Detroit. Like, let's just say Detroit. Like, a young rebuilding team like that, looking for capable veteran leadership. There are teams that would make room for Gabe Landeskog if he were to hit the market. And quite simply, the Avalanche would get outbid if that were to happen. It's not like seasons past where we just have $15 million to play with in cap space. We're going to have to spend money this offseason. So you have to wonder if that increases the price at all. I mean, I was just talking strictly fair market value. Landeskog and his agent, if they do want to make as much money as they can hold the team to the flames a little bit and be like, I can probably get close to $8 million in free agency. You're going to have to pay me a little more. And he would be right. And I don't think that's going to happen, but like, let's just say, now I've seen this tossed around a little bit. What if you leave Gabe Landeskog unprotected in the expansion draft? Okay, well, that's a fair question. Let's take a look at that. What would happen? Well, Landeskog is an unrestricted free agent, like we've talked about. And if Seattle were to take him, he could just simply not sign and then just come back to Colorado and just sign here again, and Seattle would have wasted their pick. There's always that opportunity with them. However, they would get his signing rights, and they can offer him a solid amount of money. Seattle is a blank canvas right now. Let's say we do that, and they're like, okay, we'll take him, and we will offer him $8.5 million for the next 8 years to get that solid, capable leadership in here for a few years, because we want to be like Vegas and go out and compete for a cup right away. Now, I am purely speaking in hypothetical right now. But that is the risk that you take leaving Landeskog unprotected. And really, I would say for what? Because the way the expansion draft works, and we will cover the expansion draft extensively over the next few weeks. Don't you worry. You're going to get plenty of expansion draft talk the next few weeks. But let's start with this here. So let's say you leave Landeskog and Saad unprotected, both UFAs, and you protect Rantanen, McKinnon, Kadri, Donskoy, Jost, Nichushkin, and that's it. In back-end guys, we won't talk about that. That's another conversation. So you can protect Jost and Nichushkin and Donskoy and Kadri. You have an extra spot, and you're risking losing your captain and having him get swooped up by Seattle. And there's also the risk after that is, like, even if he doesn't sign in Seattle, you're also letting him reach the open market. And another team can offer him solid money. Like, he would have to be dead set on the Avalanche. Like, you're taking a huge risk at that point. So at this point, my opinion on it is that you do have to protect Landeskog in expansion. I don't think you take that risk with your captain. I think you protect him, you lock up those signing rights, and you lock up this deal. Or maybe you don't. Joe Sakic's a much smarter person than I am, so I will trust whatever he does regardless. He has a lot more insight into what Seattle would be willing to do, but that's just my opinion on it. But getting back to my point, is that if the Avalanche let Landeskog reach the open market, they are going to get outbid. That's just how this is going to work. They're not going to be able to give Landeskog the same amount of money that, let's just say, a team like Detroit or New Jersey or LA would be able to give him, or even a team like New York would be able to give him, or like a team like Buffalo. Or even, it doesn't even have to be like one of those lowly teams. Like, it could be a team like Nashville or Minnesota or Philadelphia, teams that just have more flexibility than the Avalanche do coming up. Because this offseason, I mean, the Avalanche, the last few years, they have kind of built their team, the edges of their team, on other teams' desperation. They got Andrei Burakovsky from Washington because of some of their cap concerns and because they didn't have enough room to keep Burakovsky, and they didn't have a spot for him high enough in the lineup to fully utilize his skill set, and he wanted out, so they got him. They got Devon Toews from the Islanders because they didn't have enough money to re-sign Barzal, and they had all these great guys on defense, and Toews just had to be the odd guy out because he was due for a raise as well, so we took him off their hands. Now that's going to be us, you know? And there's probably going to be a guy or two that is just going to have to get forced out. One probably through expansion, and probably another through trade. And when it comes to Landeskog, like I said, if it's $7 million, that's an extra $1.5 million against the cap. You're not breaking the bank. But it's still just going to make the salary cap that much harder, and it's going to squeeze out another player. I think $7 million is fair. I think if you offer Landeskog 7 times 7, you give him the Anders Lee contract to a T, and the Anders Lee contract includes full no-trade clause and a modified no-trade clause in the final 2 years that gives him a 15-team no-trade list. You give him that exact contract, I would be hard-pressed to find a universe where he says no to that. I think you're pushing it at that point. I think he says yes to that, and we don't have to worry about it. But obviously, you don't offer him that right out of the gate. You're going to want to offer him a 6.5, a 6.75, and just see if you can save a little bit against the cap. And there's always the possibility that he does say yes to that as well, but you shouldn't count on it. I'm fully expecting a $7 million deal at around between 6 to 8 years, most likely 7. I think that's plenty fair. Based on what we've seen from around the league, that seems to be reasonable. This is for your captain. It's for a top-line player. Why not? I don't really see much of a downside of it, other than obviously you're taking a risk in the later years of that contract, paying more money for a not very productive player because he's getting too old. And but right now we're trying to win a cup. And if you're going to get any discount on the contract, it's for that purpose. It's not, it, you're not really thinking about 6 years down the line. We're going to have probably much bigger concerns 6 years down the line. You've got to do what's best for the team pretty much in the next 2 seasons, essentially. When the Nathan MacKinnon contract expires is probably when this Avalanche team is going to change a lot. So the next 2 seasons of MacKinnon's $6.3 million contract is the biggest window for this Avalanche team to win. And that's your focus for right now, is to win in those remaining 2 seasons. And everything else, you worry about that when the time comes. You cross that bridge when you get there. But the priority of Joe Sakic and management and this whole organization right now is to win a Stanley Cup within the next 2 years before you have to probably double Nathan MacKinnon's contract. Because he makes 6.3 right now. That is the best contract in the league, bar none. There is absolutely no discussion, debate over. MacKinnon has the best contract in the league. And you are going to owe him big time on his next deal. We're probably looking at 13, more than double what he makes right now. But that is a conversation for 2 years from now. Your concern right now is you want to win in that window. So when could Landeskog sign, thinking of all of that? I have no idea. I don't think this is going to carry over into free agency. I think this is going to get taken care of before, what was the free agency date? July 28th. I think it's going to get taken care of before that. Does it get taken care of before the expansion draft? I don't know. I don't really know if it makes that much of a difference, because I imagine that they're planning on protecting him in expansion anyway. So I just don't think that it's going to make that much of a difference either way. My only thing is, like, I don't think this is going to carry on past that. I think they'll find a deal before that. I mean, both sides are willing to get this done. And when you got two sides willing to find a solution to a conflict, things will get done probably sooner than you think. I think right now, this is the first thing that the team is going to get done, and everything else will fall in line after that. And speaking of things that will fall in line after that, that's what we're going to cover on the next episodes of this show. Next episode, more likely than not, we are going to be talking about Philip Grubauer and his next contract with the team, if he gets his next contract with the Colorado Avalanche. Grubauer is a UFA at the end of this season. He makes $3.33 million right now, and he is going to be due for a raise. And I personally think that is going to be the most interesting contract that the Avalanche have to hand out this offseason. And the one that I am the least sure about, because goalies are voodoo, and I just don't know. Honestly, I also don't know what to do. I have an opinion on it. I have a preference, but I really can't argue it so strongly either way, because with goaltending, you just don't know. And if there's a better option, then that might be the best way to go. But that, we'll save that for next episode. We'll talk about everything else, from Cale Makar to Tyson Jost to expansion draft to the draft to potential offseason targets. But today was about Gabe Landeskog and starting to transition to the offseason. But hockey's not done yet. We've still got the semifinals going on right now. We can talk about that a little bit before we wrap up. Right now, the Tampa Bay Lightning and the New York Islanders are tied 1-1. This is shaping up to be a fucking fantastic series. I love this series so far. This is the second year in a row these two have faced off. Game one, I honestly didn't see that much of it. I was kind of just hockeyed out at that point and honestly taking a second off. I watched a little bit of the first game between Vegas and Montreal, but not that much. But New York wins game one 2-1, and really should have been 2-0, but Tampa Bay gets a goal in the final minute that makes it 2-1. Looks better in the box score, but New York did a great job in that game shutting Tampa Bay down. And game two was an absolutely great game. The first period was fireworks between these two teams. You had the whole point getting shoved into Varlamov and Sorokin coming into the net. And then you had the Islanders scoring on that ensuing power play that they got from that at that point. That really shouldn't even have been a thing. And then you had Tampa Bay taking the lead when they had seven guys on the ice. And then, oh my God, I think this is a great series. And I would not be surprised if those two teams go the full seven games, honestly. These are two very solid hockey teams. I think Tampa Bay is going to win it. I think I predicted Tampa Bay in seven, I want to say. No, I think I said six, but if I can change my prediction after the first two games, I think this series is going to go seven. And I think Tampa Bay is going to take it. Not that the Islanders don't deserve it. I mean, they're a very, very good team. I would not be surprised at all if they won this series. I mean, they have home ice advantage right now. There are three games in New York and two games in Tampa for the rest of this series. And if this series ends in six, it's three games in Nassau Coliseum and only one game in Tampa. So they've got home ice for the rest of the way in this series. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a fun series. I think Tampa Bay takes it. And we'll see. Fun series, but moving on to a series that I just can't be bothered that much about, Vegas Golden Knights and the Montreal Canadiens. Because I get sad watching this game. Not sad, I just get more like, whatever. Because Vegas is going to speedbag Montreal. No disrespect to the Canadiens, they're a solid team, but Vegas is just better than them. Like, we can be honest, they're better. Vegas is now the best team in the league. They were tied being the best team in the league with us, and Montreal was the 16th seed after playing in the Canadian division all year. I mean, right now, as I'm talking, Game 2 is currently going on, and the Canadiens are winning 1-0 and have a 9-4 advantage in shots. I am not watching the game right now. I'm just looking at the NHL app, so I can't really tell you how that game is going other than the shots and the score. I look at the game flow, it looks like Montreal's playing very, very well, but I don't have an opinion on the game right now. I wouldn't be surprised if the Habs win a game here. I would not be surprised at all if this is a five game series. If it goes six, I'd be a little surprised, but Vegas is unequivocally the better team here. I mean, they beat us, for Christ's sake. I mean, we're a pretty damn solid hockey team. And they beat us in four straight games. I'm rooting for Montreal because, as you know, I hate Vegas's guts. I don't like that team at all. But I would be absolutely stunned if Montreal comes out of this series with a win. It'd probably be one of the bigger upsets, probably since the Habs beat the Penguins last year in the bubble. But even then, that was just the bubble and nothing really made sense there anyway. So probably the biggest upset since, like, Columbus-Tampa or something like that in, like, a proper playoff series, but I just don't see that happening. Maybe Montreal wins tonight. I mean, by the time you're hearing this, you'll have Game 2 in the books. I can't time travel, so I can't help you with that, so maybe it's 1-1 by the time you're hearing this. Maybe Vegas takes over like they just do at times. I mean, it's only 1-0 Montreal. Like, it's not the end of the first. It's pretty close to the end of the first period right now. I wouldn't be surprised if Vegas just rolls back with four straight goals of their own. But, I mean, it might sound like I'm disrespecting Montreal, but, like, come on. Come on. They're a fine team. The games are going to be entertaining and probably close, maybe an overtime or two in there, but Vegas, they're not going to lose this series. It would be a monumental upset. And we'll see. We'll see. I wish it was the Avalanche in there. We all do. We would beat Montreal. Vegas is going to beat Montreal. And this is really kind of a tune-up to the Stanley Cup Final anyway, which I think is going to be Vegas and Tampa. And God damn it, Vegas is going to win, aren't they? They're going to win. They're going to win, and my entire summer is going to be ruined because of it. Because I will have to avoid hockey until October, because I won't be able to stand it. Because they're going to get the full celebration. They're going to get the Stanley Cup win on home ice, and they're going to have their stupid parade, and it's going to be dumb, and I'm going to hate it, and I'm going to just bury my head in sand until October and cover my ears anytime someone refers to Vegas as the defending champs. So in other words, go Tampa, New York, and Montreal. Literally anybody but Vegas. Please, thank you, have a nice day. But that's about all that's happening right now. There's a few off-season things happening around the league right now, but nothing significant. The Avalanche re-signed Jason Megna to a two-year contract, probably a guy that's going to be a captain of the Colorado Eagles, maybe plays a game or two in the next season or the season after that, but nothing that's really going to affect the team all that much next year. But and around the league, nothing big happening yet. This off-season's going to be interesting. There's no way this one's going to be a flop. I hope not, at least, but we'll see. With the Eichel stuff and the expansion draft and everything like that, there's going to be stuff that's interesting here. So we're going to have plenty to talk about around the league in the future. But for this episode right now, that is it for this one of the Tell It As It Is podcast. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. Follow me on Twitter at GYoungsNHL and follow the show at Tell It As It Is. I have been your host, Griffin Youngs. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will catch you all next time. Enjoy the rest of your week.